The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch. We are back, and we will continue with part two, Keys to Successful Training, which is about attitude and approach. And I know, for instance, you can boss a horse around, but your attitude and approach is so important when you're working with mules. Right, Meredith?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Attitude and approach is everything, even with people. You know, the responses that you get are directly related to your attitude and your approach to someone or something. It doesn't matter who, what, dog, cat, horse, mule, or whatever. You're just going to get a whole lot more resistance from a mule. And I have learned this the hard way.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, really? When I tried that in the beginning, I fell completely into the horse training techniques, and I thought, for instance, that if I wasn't fighting with the animal, bucking them out, or anything like that, or blindfolding them to do this and that, that I was being a humane trainer. Mm. And I got away with it, training horses for a number of years.
Sure.
And I even got away with it with some of my mules until I got to where I was trying to train flying lead changes. Mm. I remember that very distinctly. And I thought, I got some information from a trainer that said, well, if you want to train for lead changes, it makes it a lot easier if you train over a pole. Well, it does.
Okay.
And it doesn't.
All right.
Because if you drill, they get tired.
Mm.
And then they lock up.
Yeah.
And I got stuck in an arena for 3 hours, and my mule would not move.
Wow.
I overdid the pole thing, and he got mad. And he locked up, and I finally just gave up and tried to lead him out of the arena. He wouldn't come. He just stood there and pulled against me. And so I thought, okay, what's happening here? I can't even get him out of the arena. Why does he want to stand here? This is a stupid place. And, you know, he didn't go until I changed my attitude. And I looked at him and I said, okay, we'll stand here as long as you want to. And as soon as I said that, he started heading for the gate. I thought, well, there's an illumination for you. He just wanted me to have a good attitude. He didn't want me pulling him to the gate or pulling him to the barn. And it had been, by this time, probably 4 hours. And I was doing everything wrong. I was making the whole lesson about being able to accomplish the flying lead change. Even after I got it the first time over the pole, that's when I should have quit.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys, you know, they will tell you if you're doing things the wrong way. Because training, it's not just a way to teach your equine to do certain movements. It's a way for you to help him to grow physically and mentally healthy and to enable him to learn to cope with the demands that will be put on him during his lifetime. And it's much like raising children to grow up to be healthy and productive adults. And in today's modern world, there's a lot of things to teach animals to do and how to even have a decent life in this world given our modern technology and all the modern things that are going on, because no longer do they have wide open spaces to live on. There used to be a lot more farms and ranches for these animals to be on, and even larger lots and things where people had houses and could keep animals like this.
Right.
How many do we now have that are stuck in boarding stables?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, to me, is a place to train vices. And I have had so many responses from people, and this is the dilemma for people, too, because you and I are introducing people to the positive aspects of mules. and getting people to get real interested in having one, but then they don't live in a place where they can really have one with a wide open area where they can be with them 24/7. And like children, mules need to be with you 24/7.
Right.
They need to know that you're going to be there for a visit, for breakfast,
mm-hmm.
and at least for dinner.
Yeah.
And that in that time in between, that you have provided them with things to do that are mule things to do, like grazing, like playing with their compadres. Mules don't do well when they don't have friends to be with.
Right.
So if you're going to get one, you should probably get two. And then you have to think about getting one that's compatible with your mule. You don't get a mini donkey and put it with a big mule, and especially with a big male mule. You got to match them.
Right.
And you got to pay attention to the type that you have, the type of animal, the type of personality, so that they're not going to unintentionally or intentionally hurt each other. And feed them. You'll be able to feed them the same thing the same way if they're not in stalls. I mean, it's optimum to go ahead and feed them in a stall where you can monitor each animal individually, but it's not always optimal, and sometimes you got to have them together. And if you have to have them together, then you need to know that you got to feed them 16 feet apart, or you're going to have a pecking order battle going on in there, and then nobody's going to be healthy because they're going to wear off all their weight chasing each other around. So you got to think about all these little things. The attitude is super important that you have, because they watch you and they listen to you. And I think that, again, we've talked about the five senses that we are born with, that we don't usually use very well. But each one of these senses that you have, your eyes, your ears, your smell, your touch, your taste, all have something to do with establishing your attitude and your approach. Not so much with taste all the time. I mean, taste is kind of you taste the feed. I've tasted the oats. The oats taste good. I've also tasted sweet feeds. Mm. And although they were sweet, it was kind of like eating a candy bar, which isn't something that you necessarily want to eat all the time.
Right.
It can suck you in, but it can also make you fat and make you extremely agitated. That's kind of how I determine what feeds are really, truly healthy and which ones aren't. Besides feeding them to my animals and then watching the way they sweat, I see a lot of people's animals start sweating after 20 minutes in a workout. And the sweat that's running off of them is smelly, doesn't smell good, it's sticky, it doesn't feel good, it doesn't feel healthy. But when you're feeding the way that I recommend to feed, they sweat, but they sweat clear,
right.
Clear liquid.
Right.
And it doesn't stink, you know, so you're using your five senses to make determinations just at that level. You're using your eyes and your ears to listen to how their body is responding and seeing what's happening with their body. And when you use your five senses like this in the communication with your animal and you pay attention to it, then you can begin to read their body language a lot more accurately. Because just sitting there looking at them and, oh, their ears are back, they must be mad. Wow. You're in trouble. I've been chased by so many mule foals with their ears back. All they wanted to do was play.
Right.
Hey, Mom, come back here.
Right.
Why are you running away? You know? Until I figured out that if I run towards them, they stop. And if I tap them on the head, turn around and run away, we can play tag.
There you go.
Because they're very, very smart. So you don't want to take generalizations and stereotypes too seriously for what people are passing around, because those are just talking points. That's not communication. Communications is when you get down to the nitty-gritty, you know, and you're brushing your animal, and maybe you're using the shedding blade, and he turns around and nips you in the ear, nips you in the shoulder or something, and says, hey! That hurts, you know?
Right.
And in the case of my mule standing in the middle of the arena, do we really have to do this anymore? Answer to that question is no. You did it right the first time, and I wasn't listening. So sometimes it takes us a whole lot longer to listen and learn what our animals are trying to say to us. But it ultimately depends on our attitude and our approach, because I have learned, if nothing else, from my mules, that they always have an honest approach to their reactions. And even horses do. But their reactions to what we're doing don't necessarily teach us very well, because horses can be sulky, sullen, victimized people sometimes. And they will go along, but they don't much teach you anything when they do that.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
So you want your animal to learn to be a healthy and productive adult, but that means teaching yourself to be one. And the subtleties in your attitude and approach, along with the solid knowledge base, can make all the difference in your training program. Whether the equine is a foal or an older animal that you've just obtained, whether he is trained or untrained, process is the same, and it's never too late to get started with the right kinds of expectations in mind. People ask me all the time, okay, well, my mule knows how to do this, 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 and this, and he's this old. Where do I start in your program? You start at the beginning. Well, which book or video is the beginning? So this is going to require a little analytical thinking on your part, because some things are fine to put in text, and some things you need to put in video, and sometimes you need a coach to come on out and help you. So you're going to have to decide which one of those things you need, but if you don't have all the information to paint the big picture, if you will, then you don't even know what you're dealing with. Mm. And as I tell people, you don't start with DVD number one. You don't start with my first book, because all of my products describe different phases of training, different places, different attitudes, different aspects of the training. Sometimes it's feed, sometimes it's the arena, sometimes it's how you house them. So my books and videos provide you with a wide gamut of all the different things that pertain to training, and not just going into an arena and training like most people think it is. My books and videos overlap, but they do not repeat. And that's why I offer packages, and we've got some great deals on packages right now that we're giving during the pre-Christmas season, so that you can afford to buy all these videos and all these books. Because I want everybody to have all the information to work with, because it's going to make all the difference in the world as to the reactions that you're going to get from your mules and donkeys. Yeah, you might have trained horses for 20 years. But if you've never trained a mule, you don't know what you're up against. And the other thing is, if you did train a mule, you might have been training one that you had the benefit of having a very forgiving and very, very willing personality. But God help you if you get one that's the opposite. But that doesn't mean that they're not trainable, and that doesn't mean that they need to go down the road to the glue factory. That just means they haven't been approached right, because I have never met a mule that didn't like me eventually.
There you go.
Well, yeah, that's because the ones that I've seen anyway, you know, the foals were all easy, real easy breezy. But the older ones that had been owned by other people and had not had the benefit of a good approach, they can be very testy. In the beginning, I needed to learn how not to fall into an animal that is testy because of his experiences in the past, and approach him as if he's never had any training, never had anybody but me. And I didn't know how to do that for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I got bits and pieces of it. The reality of the situation never really hit me to the core until I realized what I was really doing. And whether a foal, your equine's a foal or an older animal that you've just obtained, whether he's trained or untrained, the process, as I said, is the same. And it's never too late to get started with the right kinds of expectations in mind. You are creating a bond. A lot of people say they have a bond, but they don't even know what a real bond is.
Right.
Developing the foundation for a healthy friendship. They don't know what a friendship is. Setting the ground rules that will dictate the positive extent of your continuing relationship with your animal. It's important to be an active participant in your animal's training. After all, you wouldn't have someone else go out and make a friend for you, would you?
No.
You do it yourself, one-on-one, correct?
That's right.
Well, it took me a long time to realize that. And then I talked a little bit about feed, too, and how the animal's health is maintained. In the first part, we talked about a lot of the feeding stuff and the physical growth and how important it is, how they grow, and whether or not you're addressing the core strength around the bones. And that's not just muscle. That's muscles, tendons, ligaments, cartilage, connective tissue, soft tissue. And how the animal is fed and maintained is going to dictate how responsive he's going to be to training. And if you care about him, you're not going to fall for some marketing ploy that says this is the best feed and then tells you how to put on bulk muscle. I don't do that. And I'm not going to do that. I will never do that. And that invites a lot of arguments from people because they always think they know better. And these feeds that are marketed are, you have to keep in mind why they're marketed the way they are. They do build the bodies. I will give you that. But although some popular feeds may build body mass more rapidly and may even seem to be promoting healthy physical development, these high protein feeds can also have negative effects, especially with long ears. Often with high protein feeds, an animal's physical growth is accelerated and becomes disproportionate to his normal growth on simple equine feed like oats and grass hay. He needs to be able to grow as Mother Nature intended, as God intended. His mental growth can also be adversely affected with high-protein feeds, as they can cause anxiety and limited attentiveness. If the animal is feeling anxious or inattentive, or if parts of his body become sore from the unnatural growth spurts and inappropriate exercise, he may be less likely to perform in an enthusiastic an energetic way. I found that animals do best on the mixture of crimped oats, and this is all in the training tips on my website at lucky3ranch.com under training. I feed all of the equines the same oats mix, just different amounts. And I do the grass hay the same way. I feed the grass hay in the morning only because I want them to be attracted to the oats in my fanny pack when I go out there to get them. And then I feed the oats mix at night so I can have it waiting for them in their stalls or in their pens when I call them off pasture, off their turnout time. It's a motivation. And as I was saying, I mix the crimped oats with a vitamin concentrate called Showglow. It's your normal one-a-day vitamin for equines, and it has the amount to feed on the containers, and you feed according to size and weight. I feed Mazola corn oil the same way, and that's for their hooves, their coat, and for their digestive tract regularity. That helps get everything to go through them. If the hay's a little dry or something, it'll make sure that their digestive tract stays lubricated. For people that are tempted to feed dehydrated products like hay cubes or pellets, I don't recommend it. Granted, Showglow is a pellet, but it's only fed 1 ounce for an average-sized saddle mule, way less than that for smaller animals, and only twice that for draft. The same thing when I started feeding the older animals, the pelleted hoof power, I think that's pelleted too, but you don't feed very much of that either. You don't feed what's going to deprive the digestive tract of its fluids. And a lot of people have told me that they just go ahead and feed the hay cubes and feed the pellets, but they soak them in water. You cannot put enough water on something to equal the amount of fluids that go through the digestive tract. That's right. Physically impossible.
Right.
So don't kid yourself. That's another one of those marketing things. Like I said, as a reward for positive responses in training, your animal should get the additional crimped oats because he gets immediate energy when he needs it the most, when he's in the middle of his lesson. You don't realize it, but it's very much like you eating a candy bar to boost your energy. It does that for them. So you don't have to feel like, oh, I can't feed them very much crimped oats, or they're going to get fat, or they're going to do this or do that, because unlike any other equine reward, the crimped oats are something that the animal will continue to work for. They'll never tire of it, and it's healthy for them, and they burn it off during the lessons when you're giving them to them. Apples, carrots, horse treats, and the like are things that they could get sated on,
right,
and are not necessarily good for your equine in excess. Some of these treats can even have the same effect that candy has on children. The animal might experience residual effects such as an upset digestive tract, short attention span, hypertension, and aggression. They can get aggressive during training because they want more. So even though they want the carrots and they want the apples, you don't want that aggressive behavior. But feeding the same way and at the same time each day is not only healthy, but it fosters confidence and trust in your animal because it makes him feel good. He learns without question that he can depend on you for his welfare and that his efforts will be rewarded with his favorite reward of crimped oats. I gotta say, the one thing that I never saw before I started rewarding with crimped oats, was to be able to call my animals off grass and off pasture.
Oh, yeah.
I can go out there and go, hey, guys, I got something you really like. And we've been saying that since the very beginning, haven't we?
That's right.
Do you want some? And they all come running. And when they all come running, if I'm outside the fence, they all line up on the fence, and every set of ears are perked forward and attentive to me. And isn't that what we were working on all the time? I've never seen that happen anywhere else. But my animals like to smile at me, and it's really convenient. We're out there taking pictures. I go out there, and I call them over, and they're all at the fence, and I give them all their reward, and then I go stand back from the fence and stand back from where they are and put a fence between me and them, and I go, smile for the camera! And they go, okay! I can't tell you how many times I'm out there shuffling my feet, waving a bag around to get a good picture. I didn't know it was going to be this easy. It's pretty cool. And being patient and being kind and considerate towards your equines and spending a little more time developing a good solid foundation with him before moving on to more elaborate maneuvers will yield much better results. For instance, you might think that once your mule is moving around the round pen at all three gates with a reverse, he's ready to begin riding. This may not necessarily be true. Considering that it takes years to really condition muscles to their maximum strength, 6 to 8 months of doing round pen exercises is really not that long a period of time. Think about how long it takes football players to do all those pregame exercises that they do before they are put in their lower level games. And how long does it take them before they get graduated to the pros? It's not just about how well they play. It's about how well their bodies are conditioned and how completely their bodies are conditioned to contribute to how well they play. Well, we have to think of our mules in the same respect. So if you don't spend at least 6 months on flat work leading training and 6 months on obstacle leading lessons to promote strength and balance in good posture, you can greatly hinder your equine's ability to perform in the round pen on the circle. Sounds like a circle simple enough, but it really isn't. As we've talked before, they will be out of balance, putting pressure in points they never knew they had. Right. And they can come up sore, they can come up lame, and you can't necessarily see where it's coming from because it might be very deep in their bodies. Mm. In turn, spending less than 6 to 8 months in the round pen will not produce the best results in muscle development. If you move through conditioning too fast, it will affect your animal's mental attitude toward training, and he will very likely experience soreness and emotional depression and become sour. He won't want to go with you. He'll get barn sour. He won't want to leave his friends. And he will most likely become resistant to training altogether. However, if you take the time to develop him in a slow and meticulous way with small steps, and the training is always something that he's able to do that he can get rewarded for, he's going to enjoy his time for you, and then you can get him off faster. My animals all look like when I call them, they all line up at the fence, and if they had hands, they'd all have their hands in the air going, "Take me! Right. I want to go!" When you're in the round pen, pay attention to how many laps your equine does in each direction and at each gate. How many reverses to the left, and then how many reverses to the right. Take this opportunity to assess whether he will need more laps on the side that is weaker. Now, a lot of people think, oh, yeah, okay, I'll just do more laps on that side. But if he's doing these things and he's not in good posture, you may not only need to do more laps in the round pen, you may actually have to stop round pen work and go back to leading on the hourglass pattern to revive your postural core strength. So if you make these things your priority, when you finally do start riding him, his straight lines will be straighter, his turns will be smoother and more fluid, his reverses and stops will be more balanced and with minimal effort. As your equine grows stronger and more mentally and physically confident, the upper level movements will come faster and easier than did the basic foundation training. Sometimes you think of it when you're out there training, you're going, I'm taking this much time doing this. Is it always going to be like this? The answer to that is no, because once you get this nice, basic, strong foundation, then the movements that he's going to be faced with later are going to be a lot easier because now he's in physical conditioning that allows his body to move correctly. And when things are moving correctly, you can throw anything at him and he can do it all. Right. Now, people said that mules are more versatile than horses, and I contend that equines are a whole lot of fun to ride. They know how to do all kinds of recreational things that we've dreamed up, but they don't have to be bred to do those certain things. There are certain personalities and certain body types that are going to do better in certain activities than others. But if you pay attention to the development of those bodies with particular interest to their strong points, then you will know what those animals are going to be good at, really good at, but they will also probably be very competent across the board in versatility because they're conditioned properly. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
A lot of this training that we do is fast.
Right, right.
With targeted movements in mind. And when you do that, you don't condition a whole body and it makes certain movements very difficult. Right. And it's very easy to make a misinformational assessment of the animal's capabilities if you don't condition their whole body as if they were going to do everything. That's why I produced that documentary, Give Your equine the athletic advantage. That's what I mean when I say that. And that's what that documentary is all about. And since Rock and Roll, I've learned even more about considering my animals further and investigated the value of therapeutic tools like equine massage and chiropractics. A lot of people look at those two things and go, oh, well, my equine's sore here. Well, let me call in the chiropractor, or let me give him a massage. And they think that one visit is going to help. If you did not spend that 2 years of training with core strength, postural core strength and balance in mind, and have a strong core, then one little visit from a masseuse or a chiropractor is not going to work. You use these things in conjunction with the core strength training for 2 years, because that is what's building that strong foundation. And it just might be that that sore spot or that reason that you're seeing, that your animal makes you think you need a chiropractor or a masseuse, might have just been just a little tweak in a nerve or a tweak in a muscle.
Okay.
And that's fine if it's over postural core strength, but if it's not and you have them strengthened one time and then go back there and do what you were doing before, it's gonna happen again and again and again, because you don't have the strong postural balanced foundation.
You bet.
Because they don't throw the whole foundation out of kink. They just throw something out. It's just like you turning your head and getting a kink in your neck and going, oh, I got a kink in my neck. I turned my head the wrong way. Or I slept on my neck the wrong way and woke up in the morning and I got a kink. And then you go to the chiropractor. But if you don't practice good posture, that's going to happen again and again and again, right? The same approach, the same attitude is happening with your animals. And when you learn to think of them in those kinds of terms, then it becomes more credible that you need to spend 2 years on this groundwork training, because it's going to give them longevity, better health, going to give you a smoother ride, a better experience between the two of you. And even if you don't plan to show your equine, he's got to be strong enough to be able to perform easily, even on something as seemingly simple as trail riding. Different exercises build different muscle groups, so it's important to know what exercises you need to do to begin with and which exercises should follow. Don't get yourself sucked into drilling on something that just isn't working. If you run into problems and things aren't working out properly, just go back and try something that's more simple in its demand, but in the sequential, logical fashion that we've described here, so that you're not overdoing, so that you don't damage whatever is damaged over and over and over again. And sometimes it's just a matter of approaching the problem differently, or even leaving it to another day. Like humans, equines have their own individual ways of learning, and it's up to you to figure out what works best with your particular equine on any given day. A lot of people think too, well, I'm not going to show my animal, so this doesn't really matter. They even go into showing thinking it doesn't even matter as long as they look good. Then they think that their equine is in good posture when they really aren't. And then that problem gets exacerbated by judges that are not very well educated and don't know what they're looking at. They look at these animals and they, oh, in a pleasure class, for instance, that animal's moving nice and smooth. Looks like a nice smooth ride, and he's going nice and slow so I won't fall off, and he's a really pretty color. I mean, it drove me crazy to see how many different judges were out there and look at the way they judged these animals, because then the owners don't get a fair assessment of the things that they need to do. And you can't even ask a judge why they placed the animals the way they did, because they're not going to tell you what I just did. They're just going to tell, oh, this one was doing better, or that one was doing better. And I particularly had experience with that in the donkey pleasure class out at Bishop Mule Days. And little Jack Horner was trained to the max. He did perfectly, and he placed fourth. The other ones were not doing so perfectly, and I watched them. I could watch them. My donkey was going on autopilot. I had ridden him in the next strap. I knew what my posture needed to be, and I could look around, because I looked around corners and circles when I was training. So I could watch every donkey in that class, and I thought, well, I'm going to go out. I'm not going to just take this. I know this donkey was first, and I'm going to go ask the judge. And so I walked up to the judge, and I said, excuse me, can I ask you a question? And he said, sure, what do you want to know? I said, I would like to know why little Jack Horner didn't place first. I didn't say fourth. I said, didn't place first. And he said, well, I thought there were other donkeys that I liked better. That's what I thought.
And you didn't strangle him?
No, I stayed polite, kind, considerate, tactful.
Okay.
And I said, thank you. And I left. And I walked away. Did you know what that judge said to me? And I talked to every one of my friends about it. And I said, I don't think we have a very educated judge here today.
Right, yeah.
So I may not have argued with him, but his reputation with the rest of the show world in that show got word of it. All over. It went around like a bad rumor.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Sure.
But if you ever want to get somebody, that's the way to do it. Don't shoot yourself in the foot, in other words.
Right. Makes sense.
And then just go home and keep doing your homework. Because one of the things that my dressage instructor told me that was very helpful, and before I started taking lessons from her, which I did for 10 years, I kind of thought, well, I don't really need to take dressage lessons because I'm doing Western pleasure reining, Western riding, and those are Western events, so probably don't need lessons in dressage right now. But once I did, she told me, she said, Meredith, even if you're riding Western pleasure, you still need to ride in balance. Your animal still needs to be in balance, and he needs to move in balance. And no matter whether it's Western or English or side saddle or even driving, all of these things come into play. And it's only going to happen if you slow down, stop thinking about winning the class or the mule doing what you want, and just think about riding in a bubble with these goals in mind, these goals of getting your animal in his best physical condition with a balanced and strong core in a good posture, and yourself the same way, and riding every movement as if it was a singular movement. That's what dressage is all about. It's a word that means training, and it means breaking things down into the smallest details that you can imagine. That's why they have those tests. When you start at training level, and then there's four tests in training level that address certain things that are very, very basic, like big circles and straight lines and smooth arcs, not abrupt arcs. And then you move on to first level, and then it addresses transitions in gaits and doing those smoothly and fluidly and the exercises that go with those. And there's four tests in there that stay with those. And then you move into second level dressage, and then they start adding some lateral movements like serpentines and leg heels. And then in third level, then you get up to that level, and in second level you do leg heels, but when you get to third level, all of a sudden you're learning to do half passes and bending your animal the opposite direction and moving in a balanced, smooth fashion that way. And that's why I tell people that you don't know how difficult a side pass really is for your animal. You're just thrilled when he does it. And really, what they're doing, a side pass should actually be done very much like a half pass, which involves your animal looking out of the corner of his eye and moving on a straight line sideways, looking where he's going, but keeping his body as straight as he can. And that's an actual side pass. And what that is the medium between a leg yield, where he's actually leading with his shoulder and looking the opposite way, and a half pass, where he's leading with his nose and going the opposite way, and his shoulder's following on the other side. Mm-hmm. You see, these movements all have purpose. The trainers are out there because they're trying to make a living, and so they can't spend all the time with all their students in any realistic fashion to teach them all these things. They can only teach you the things that are going to really matter to you at whatever point of riding you're at, and they can enhance your experience, and they do. They really do. They have a tremendous purpose for students and everything to begin learning, to gather interest in equines, to get started the right way, to build relationships, to have fun, to gather together in a social community and enjoy each other's company, learning all these things together. So there are a lot of positive things that go on, and I'm not trying to discount any trainers by any means, because they all represent different levels of accomplishments and different levels that people are at for learning. As I said at the beginning of this whole thing, we all learn differently, and our animals learn differently, and we got to find the path of least resistance to build those bonding relationships that we want to have with our equines. I'm just trying in my own mission, with all the experience that I've had over 50 years of investigating all these different things to a fault and becoming anal about it. I'm just sharing it with everybody, trainers, students alike, you know, because
right.
I want the best experience for everybody and every animal. And if I don't put it out there, nobody else has got the opportunity to do that like I do. And so I take that very seriously. And I may be anal, but I'm also obsessive, and I also love people and love mules excessively. And I just want everybody to get the same kind of bonding and enjoyment out of their animals that I've gotten out of mine. And I want the trainers that are out there to be able to expand their client bases and to bring more people into the equine industry for the same reasons. Because I don't think you can get this kind of joy from an urban situation. This comes from rural experience. This comes from knowing equines and seeing all the different things that you can do with them. I know when I got started with mules in 1967, they were going out. The rumor of the day was there's no more use for mules. The tractors are replacing them. And I thought, what a horrible thing. They're so cute. I love those long ears, you know.
All right.
And I thought, I wonder if there's anything I can do to give them more use in the modern world. And that's when I came up with the idea that maybe if I showed people all the different things that they could do using the horse industry as a template, and I could go out there and do everything the horses were doing and then some, and have the mules win over the horses in all those events, then I could give them a new purpose in the modern world called recreational mules.
Oh, yeah.
And they have turned out to be extraordinary. And they have competed to the top with everything I have ever tried. Heck, they even banned Hambone from the stadium jumping show. He was at Fort Carson, and he beat all the horses in show jumping way, way back when. And he was one of the first ones that I heard about. But he was also one that inspired me. Another was Marister Farms Kit that competed in the three-day event and did very, very well. So I knew, even before I got started, that they were good in jumping. But I figured if they could do jumping, which is difficult for most equines, that they could do anything else. And I have not been disappointed.
You bet. And you know that your mule is doing an outstanding job when they ask you to leave and not come back. Right?
I guess, yeah. That's true.
It's like, you've embarrassed my horse.
Well, at the shows, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the people ask you and your mule to excuse yourselves from a horse show, that's like a badge of honor.
Right. Oh, yeah. And please don't come back.
Right. However, the flip side of that is there are those equine lovers that are not quite so snobbish, and they're the ones that not only want a horse in their stable, but they've learned to want a mule, too.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So, and there's a whole lot more of those cropping up everywhere. And the snobbier ones are kind of going by the wayside from what I've seen.
Sure.
Because there aren't as many as there were when I was starting out in 1973.
Right.
When I started back then, oh, nobody liked mules. It was like, that's one of those stubborn, ornery, when I get the chance to kill you, I will animals. Mm-hmm. And that's what people really believed. But
yeah.
I just looked at that over and over and over again until I finally realized that the people that really got along with the mules were the people that had a kind, polite, considerate, respectful approach with their animals and enjoyed and rewarded the positive aspects of their animals. So attitude and approach is paramount, not only with mules, but with everybody and everything.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, Meredith, we just...
did it again.
It never ends, you know? Every time I listen to these podcasts, and they're just outstanding. And I'm so blessed that I get to do this, so...
I feel blessed, too, Cindy. I think we truly, truly are.
You bet. All right. We will talk again, and you enjoy the rest of your day.
And you do the same.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566. And I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.